Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Holiday Song Countdown 2, 10th place.
All right, Patrick, here we are for Holiday Countdown number 2.
Yes, I can't believe it's been a year.
Here on Rockin' the Suburbs, we've never done a sequel to a countdown show. Usually when we've done countdowns on like particular bands or artists, that's it, man. That's the list, right? But there are so many holiday songs that we thought, you know, the 10 we did last year just weren't enough. So we're going to do like the next 10. All right. So we'll get to all that in a minute here. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan. And we're recording on Zoom today with a cast of about a dozen listeners. People who I believe have voted in this poll, and thank you and welcome everyone. And listeners to the podcast, we'll hear from them as the week goes on, right? And is all your Christmas shopping all set, Patrick?
Yeah, I'm going to be getting on that starting tomorrow. I like to wait, you know,
you
give myself
time.
A deadline. Like any writer, without a deadline, I can't function.
You have time. It's actually kind of amazing how easy Christmas shopping has become, right? Like literally, like I'm sitting on my couch watching, you know, sports and just with like clicks on my computer, like, okay, that person's done. And that person's done. It's kind of insane, right?
No malls anymore.
So I am going to mention a couple of things here before we get to the countdown. Okay. As far as the listener poll goes, Patrick, we did this online. People could submit up to 10 songs, right, mm-hmm. that they picked. It was open-ended. We didn't give people a list or anything like that. The only thing we did was we didn't allow people to vote on last year's top 10 songs, and we'll get to that in a moment.
Right.
But wow, you tell me that we got 251 songs, different songs got votes by a total of 53 listeners, right?
It's incredible that once you got past those, you know, kind of those 10 from last year, it really started spreading out. I know that some of the songs that I was looking at when we went through these votes, I had never heard of before, but it was really, really eclectic. And there was a ton. There really was. And Elvis Presley, for one really quick example, all of a sudden you start going down to like second level, you know, Blue Christmas, maybe you pass by that, you start to go down to the second ones and then third ones. And then I think there was four or five different Elvis songs that got picked. So people were really going all over the map. And we had a couple of people just that went indie and some people that came up with some really creative stuff. So it was very pleasantly surprising for sure.
Very cool. I didn't even know there were 251 Christmas songs.
I think there are.
Okay. Well, I am educated today. All right. So I mentioned last year's top 10 was disqualified from this year's voting.
Yep.
And I'm going to recap that list here real quickly. So last year at number 10 was Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight by the Ramones. Number 9 was Last Christmas by Wham. Number 8 was Christmas Wrapping by The Waitresses. Number 7, Happy Christmas, War is Over by John and Yoko Lennon. Number 6, Peace on Earth, Little Drummer Boy, David Bowie and Bing Crosby. Number 5, Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC. Number 4 was Santa Claus is Coming to Town by Bruce Springsteen. Number 3, Christmas, Baby Please Come Home by Darlene Love. Number 2 is Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues. And number 1, Father Christmas by the Kinks. Any comments there, Patrick, as we look at that list anew?
No. I mean, I thought it was a really, you know, kind of a solid consensus top 10 that we came up with. And I think the Kinks won pretty handily last year, if I remember. That was a real favorite for everybody.
Yeah. That is a great one. Okay. So I guess now we should get into the new top 10.
Yeah, let's
do it. The 2022, the second 10, I guess, right?
The second 10.
Well, I'm just going to call these 10. I'm not going to start with 20. We're going to start with 10 and count down to 1 again, okay?
Okay.
All right, so here we go. Number 10. Let me see if I have this queued up and ready to go.
It's Christmas
There we go. That was Band-Aid. Do they know it's Christmas? What a super group, Band-Aid. Sadly, they didn't do anything else. They didn't follow up with any more songs. But 1984, that was, of course, a charity record that went to support famine relief in Ethiopia. And I will just say, I know the song has a lot of detractors these days, and you guys feel free to speak up. I always kind of liked it, and I think it's nostalgic for me at this point, because when it came out in 1984 and I was in high school, and I was so into MTV at the time, and MTV played all these British artists, right? And then to see them all together in like one song, it was just like blowing my mind. It was like nowadays, I guess kids would like the Avengers assemble or something like that. It was like, you know, like all my heroes in one place, right? So,
yeah.
And I think it's, you know, you can, well, I'll let other people decide, but, you know, I also think it's kind of a nice poppy Christmas song. So there you go, that too. So your thoughts, and Patrick?
The drumming, I think, is outstanding.
Well,
really,
there
that's
you go.
That's what jumps out for me. Yeah, obviously. And written by Bob Geldof and Midge Ure from Ultravox.
That's right. Bob Geldof from Boomtown Rats, Midge Ure from Ultravox. Yes, yes, of course. Any comments out there from the group? I think Bill Mulligan has something to say.
Kind of to follow on to what you said, Jim, I'm a little surprised, although maybe not with the people, our voting audience, that this made it in, because it does get kind of pummeled in this day and age for the lyrics having a very privileged perspective on things. But I enjoy it just as purely as a song. And yeah, I like to view it the time it was made. It didn't, you know, when people maybe were less sensitive to how they were perceived, their perceptions were perceived by others. The other thing is, I was 20 when it came out, and I was inordinately proud of myself that when it came on MTV, I could identify every single person in the video, including the three members of Bananarama by name.
Nice. That's fabulous.
Any other comments? Stephen Rutledge.
Well, just about stopped laughing from Patrick's pronunciation of Midge Ure, but I think I was in my first year at senior school when I think this came out, and I think it works on a number of levels as a Christmas song, because it hits all the cheesy bells that, you know, the cheesiness that what makes a quite often a good Christmas song, you know. But also, it did actually change things. It was, you know, when the news reports came out from Ethiopia in that summer, you know, and it did change. There was this big change, and it was really quite exciting at the time that suddenly it's like, oh, actually, something is being done here. You know, it's a tiny little thing, but it changed the whole perception. And it was just a big story, and because of obviously the age you know, I was when that came out. It's very nostalgic for that reason, not only because it's a song from that age, but you sort of remember that period of time when suddenly it wasn't just about what you were getting for Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
It's not a perfect song, but it did a lot of good, you know?
Any other thoughts? Craig Rosen.
Hey, Stephen, Cheesy Bells, one of my favorite Christmas songs, by the way. But I just looked it up, Patrick. You mentioned the drums, and you will be pleased to know that the person that played the live drums and apparently brought an entire kit to the sessions, none other than Phil Collins.
Yes, sir.
Not to be Scrooge McDuck, I don't know. It's like way... Old punk rock Craig would say, no way, that's way too sappy. And it still sounds pretty sappy. You know, if I let my guard down, maybe it will win me over. But I was just thinking today that I'm not really critical about music anymore. I like everything, but I don't know. It's pretty sappy still.
All right, fair enough. All right, any more comments on this song or should we move on? All right, so here's the deal, peoples. I mentioned this was a top 10, but you're going to get some extra Christmas gifts in your stocking this year because we had a tie for number 10. So that means we're going to do more. It's just more. Okay, there you go. Bob Dylan's Must Be Santa, a song that I know primarily as a song that my kids would sing at Christmas programs when they were in elementary school, and they all loved it because it was like a fun kids song. And to hear Bob Dylan do that song was one of the most unexpected things I could imagine, and yet I find it completely charming. And I've turned to Patrick, who is our resident Dylan scholar. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's really great. And when this Christmas in the Heart album came out, it was pretty surprising. I mean, I think it was Dylan's 34th album, studio album or something like that. And he'd never made a Christmas record before and always seemed to be, not too interested in any of that kind of holiday stuff. And yet here he is with this record that's kind of steeped in American Christmas music vernacular, you know, and it's great. And there's that weird video where he's wearing the wig, right? And he's kind of running around at like the Christmas party too, which is crazy. And I like what Mackenzie said. The best part of this song is replacing the reindeer with President.
Yes, I made sure to get that in the clip we had there. The whole, not just presidents, but like, you know, like Soviet premieres and stuff, too, right? There's like, it's so that's so funny when it comes up, you know.
And this was kind of around the time he was doing a lot of stuff you might not expect. He had that radio show, Theme Time Radio Hour, for a while, and, you know, he was doing all kinds of things. So I think it's great, and this is definitely the standout, at least for me, on the record, even though there's a lot of good stuff on it.
So great. All right, I turn now. We have a couple of listeners with Hands up. I turn now to Bob Peterson.
Yeah, this is definitely a family favorite. I was lucky to have discovered this Bob Dylan Christmas album right when it came out. And when I played it for the family, everything on there was a family favorite. But this song especially, I mean, we were like the Griswolds in our car singing to this song on our way to our family for Christmas Eve. And yeah, it brings back a lot of good memories. But it's not just this song. Some of the songs on there he does in earnest, but they're hilarious. To hear him sing, "Do you hear what I hear?" makes our whole family just laugh. He doesn't have the nicest voices, and it comes out pretty gravelly and abrasive, but it's still really cool. But now that Must Be Santa is definitely, I think, I don't know if I voted that number one on my list, but yeah, that's a family favorite. And that's going to be on my Christmas show on the radio show. So thank you for playing it.
Very cool.
Absolutely.
All right, we turn now to Jason Goble.
So I'll be honest, that's the first time I thought it was a Dylan original. So I didn't even know it was something that was essentially written otherwise. The first time I heard about this album, I was listening to their rival of yours, Sound Opinion, but you guys didn't exist at that point. And and I remember they reviewed this album. And the general consensus is, "Bob, what the hell are you doing?" that having been said, I sort of agree with everybody. I mean, this song puts a huge smile on my face. I will say, as the rest of the album, yes, his voice is gravelly, but, it's intelligible and it's kind of clear that he's enjoying what he's doing at the end of the day. So... yeah, I am a big Dylan fan, but I don't think it's just because I'm a Dylan fan that I love this album.
Yeah.
Well, there's certainly some of that mischief that he likes to get up to. You can tell he's enjoying the fact that he knows it's going to confound everybody's expectations of him. And I think that's part of the fun of it too. It's got a great spirit to it. It really does.
Any other? Oh, I should mention, by the way, that this came out in 2009. Just to get that on the record there, for future historians. When Craig, I want to bring this up to you as well. This also, I think, you and I have talked about this in the past. This carries on a holiday tradition of Jewish singers taking on Christmas songs, right?
Yeah, there's a great history of Jews writing Christmas songs.
All right. Any more comments on Bob Dylan Must Be Santa? All right. Now, I mentioned the tie for 10. It was actually a three-way tie for 10. So more bonus Christmas gifts. What Christmas Means to Me, Stevie Wonder, 1967 on his album, Someday at Christmas. And I know, oh my gosh, look who has her hand up already. Mackenzie Crenshaw, let's start with you on this.
Hi guys, what's up? It's been a minute. So, love this song. One of my favorites. He was only 17. You said 67, right?
1967 is what I have here.
Yeah, so he was only 17 years old, which is wild. This album actually didn't chart, which is also very interesting to me. But I love this song, super upbeat, happy. I always think of the movie Elf when I hear this song, because there's a scene where they're jumping on the mattresses in the department store. But it's like a classic Motown song, but Christmassy. So there's, I mean, what do you not like about it?
I mean, that's a good point. It's just, talk about Christmas joy, right? It's just coming out. Like, you can't contain it in this song. It just, it's just, you know, through and through and coming out the speakers and all of that. It's just, it's wonderful, wonderful song. It, like, classic Stevie, perfectly in his style, but also says Christmas somehow. Right, Patrick?
Yeah, totally agree. And the album itself, you know, like Mackenzie mentioned, I think was not really very successful when it came out. It was just a record that, you know, I guess it's time for Stevie to do his Christmas album this year or whatever, and was released in November of 1967. But it's grown, I think, in stature. I think there was a reissue sometime in the 2000s of it too. And this song is one of those ones that was written by I think some staff writers in the Motown stable or somebody like that. It's great. I was going to point out too that Craig Rosen did vote for the Hanson version. I had to double check that's what he meant to do, but he did. I don't think I've ever heard that. Although I think we have the Hanson Christmas album around here somewhere on CD.
Okay.
Yes, Mackenzie pointed out Anna and George Gordy were the writers. That's what I was looking for. Yep.
There you go. Craig Rosen has a comment now.
Yeah, I have to explain the Hanson version. That was around the time when my kids were younger and we were listening to Radio Disney a lot. And we had that album. I think it's called Snowed In.
Snowed In, that's it.
Yeah. Good. Have it on CD. Probably have it still somewhere. But yeah. Their version is good. I don't hate on Hanson. Hanson was they're still good. You know, they play instruments, they sing.
They all do. Right. Yeah.
All right. Any more comments on Stevie Wonder? No? All right. Okay. So there you go. That's episode one of Holiday Delights, and three songs tied for number 10 on this particular countdown poll. But that's it. Just three. So tomorrow we'll go with numbers 9, 8, and 7. All right.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks everyone for joining us here on Holiday Countdown 2. There's more to come tomorrow. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we will talk to you then.
None other than Phil Collin, 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 Phil Collin.